from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, lawmakers are just beginning to form their own plan to close a more than $490 million budget gap for the 2018 fiscal year. That less than a week after Governor Jim Justice presented a plan of his own. We talked to House Speaker Tim Armstead about the balance of government cuts versus tax increases. And the first bill to make its way through the House of Delegates adds some protections for whistleblowers. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Lawmakers are less than a week into this legislative session, and already the budget is their top priority. They will be tasked with closing a $497 million budget gap in the upcoming fiscal year, and it will take either major cuts to government or politically unpopular tax increases to do it. Governor Jim Justice's proposal is largely based on raising taxes, something he said on the campaign trail he wouldn't do. We look back at the governor's plan laid out in his first State of the State address last week.
I truly, from the bottom of my heart, hate tax increases. I hate them.
Governor Jim Justice stood at a podium on the House floor to give his first State of the State address. Free of teleprompters, with a whiteboard and dry erase markers at his side, Justice made his way through several legislative proposals without much detail. Most ideas he'd shared with voters on the campaign trail or during his inaugural address last month. But a bulk of Wednesday night's speech focused on the budget and his plan to fix it.
The past 4 years, no matter how hard we've tried, we have lived off rainy day, and we've lived off the low-hanging fruit that we could cut away.
During former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's administration, years of back-to-back budget cuts resulted in a more than $400 million reduction in the size of state government. During the same period, the state's rainy day fund, what's essentially a savings account, was used several times to help West Virginia get to a balanced budget. That decision was made by lawmakers in order to forego tax increases. The legislature will once again have to dip into that account this year, pulling $123 million to help pay the state's bills through the end of the fiscal year in June. But Justice says he's no longer willing to balance the budget on the shrinking fund. But he's not offering up many more government cuts either.
I truly believe that any cuts that are out there that somebody can bring me that's not going to just stifle us as a patient, I'm for. I am delivering to you $30 million worth of cuts.
The $26.6 million in cuts target 10 state agencies, eliminating their general revenue funding completely. They include the Divisions of Labor and Culture and History and the Educational Broadcasting Authority, which is made up solely of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In all, the plan cuts 189 jobs. Outside of those select cuts, Justice says cutting state government any further would be catastrophic. That's why he wants to raise more than $450 million in new tax revenues.
I've got to have everybody in this state pay a half of a penny in additional sales tax. There's no way around it.
That's his first of several proposed tax increases, hike the consumer sales tax by 0.5%. It's paired with getting rid of exemptions in the state's sales tax code, something both the House Speaker and Senate President have said they support. Those two changes combined bring in more than $180 million in new revenue each year. Justice also wants to create a commercial activities tax at 0.2%, which he explains is a tax on the gross sales of any business. That would raise more than $214 million annually. The governor's office has also released an alternative budget, one that relies solely on cuts. It would close every major college and university in the state, with the exception of Marshall and West Virginia universities. It would cut Energy Express, the Hatfield and McCoy Trail, all senior services, the Library Commission, funding for farmers markets, and many others, and result in the loss of 3,000 jobs. And Justice says that's not what he wants to do.
What would you rather do? Would you rather have your school plummeted even more, your seniors just forgotten, your vets forgotten, your parks closed, Fairmont State shut down, on and on and on? Or would you be willing, as a people's, to say, I'm willing to pay a half a penny more, and I'm willing, as a business, to step up and pay 0.2%, because I love West Virginia, and we're going somewhere.
The governor's budget also includes a complex plan to increase the state's gasoline tax, fees paid at the Division of Motor Vehicles, and the tolls on the West Virginia Turnpike to pass a new bond for road construction. That plan relies not just on voter approval, but also on renegotiating with the federal government about which roads can actually be tolled. Joining me now to discuss the governor's proposal and his own ideas about how to balance the state budget is House Speaker Tim Armstead. Speaker, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Great to be here with you, Ashley.
Let's start with some reaction to the governor's proposal that he laid out during his State of the State address. $26.6 million in new cuts, $450 million in new tax revenues. How do you feel about that plan?
Well, obviously, we were disappointed, because we really felt like that we were going to be able to work together with the governor and make the necessary cuts that I think the people of West Virginia expect us to make to this budget. And I would point out that although it's said that he has $26 million in cuts here, this budget is actually over $300 million more than the current fiscal year budget we're in. So it's hard for me to characterize anything in this budget as cutting. It's actually expanding government, it's spending more money, and doing it with the biggest tax increase in the history of our state. So there's a great deal of concern about that, and I think we really believe that the people of West Virginia expect us to tighten our belt like they're having to do in their own homes, and this really doesn't do that.
Just to follow up on that, part of that expansion is this $105 million in the Save Our State Fund that's going to be dedicated to the Department of Commerce to attract new businesses. Is it safe to say that's one of the first things that you all cut out of the governor's proposal?
Well, I think that's certainly not something that's been that well received, to be honest. We really believe that the way to attract businesses, to get to the root causes of what have been barriers in our economic development in the past. That's our tax structure, regulatory climate, legal climate. Those are the things that really get people to come here and invest, and those are the companies that are already here to put other people to work. Going out and trying to basically hand out money to do that has been something we've been concerned about over the years, and I really don't think that there's a lot of interest in the state, in the legislature, to spend another $105 million to do that, particularly considering the budget situation we're in at this point.
New taxes, not something you all are that interested in, but let's talk about them in detail just a little bit. The governor's proposing a half a cent increase to the consumer sales tax. He wants to get rid of any exemptions or close what some people say are loopholes in the state sales tax, services that don't have to pay. And then a 0.2% gross business sales tax. Now, these exemptions, let's start there, because you and the Senate president have both said that that's something that you all want to do. You want to get rid of the exemptions and the consumer sales tax.
Well, I think we wanted to do it in terms of a broader tax package, which is what we've been studying over the past year through our tax reform committee, through our GATE committee, which is Government Accountability, Transparency, and Efficiency Committee. So we wanted to do that as part of a larger package of reforming our tax structure to make it more friendly to job creation in our state. But we certainly are interested in working with the governor to look at these exemptions, because over the years, so many things have been exempted from the sales tax that just makes those who are not exempt have to pay more in sales tax, because you know, the smaller the base that we have that pays that tax, the more they're going to pay in the tax. So we've talked about broadening the base and lowering the rate for many years. And so I think there's a great deal of interest in looking at those exemptions, particularly on ones lawyers and accountants and those types of exemptions. Now, I'm not interested in doing away with the exemption on food. I know that some people are talking about it, but we work very hard to get food to not be subject to the sales tax. And I think there's a lot of concern about even going down the road of trying to put that back on. So I'm not interested in that. But I think these other exemptions are things that we're certainly willing to look at.
So we recognize that it's pretty early in the session and you guys have quite a while to work on this budget. If your plan doesn't include new tax increases, what does it look like?
Well, I think it has a number of different components. One is certainly we're going to have to cut. We're going to have to cut the size of government. And we've talked about right-sizing our government. The people of West Virginia do not expect government to do everything. And there are things that are very important. We need to make sure we have a strong education system in our state. We need a safety net for those who need government services in terms of health care and those types of things. But we really feel like that the people of West Virginia elected us to be in the majority to change the way we have been doing business for many, many years. And that's been very heavy on spending and expanding government's role, expanding programs, and that's not the direction we think the people of West Virginia want to go. So we are going to have to make some tough choices in terms of cuts. But other things we can do in terms of restructuring that I think will not necessarily mean that we do away with particular services. We're looking at restructuring our pension obligations of how we pay that. And there are certain ways we can do that, which is basically refinancing those pensions that I think can save up to $100 million just doing that, depending on how we go about doing that. So things like that, looking at our fleet, our automobile fleet, where we have so many automobiles that are being driven by state workers that we've found a great deal of abuse in that we want to crack down on. So there are a number of different things like that we think we can do to fill a great deal of that hole. And then if we do look at any taxes, what we would look at is tax reform, changing, you know, the ability of how this tax structure is formed, because we believe it's outdated, it doesn't encourage job creation, and it takes money from those who can put it back in the economy and create jobs. So I think if we look at anything in terms of taxation, it's going to be looking at tax reform in the broader sense, not just putting additional taxes on the people of West Virginia.
You've also said in the past couple weeks, you know, you've talked about restructuring and then also said privatizing might be a way to go. When you say that, what does that mean? Specifically, what can we privatize to save government money?
Well, I think we need to look at anything that we're actually competing with the private sector to do. And there are a number of things throughout government that happens. And since I've been in the legislature, there have been bills proposed where we want to create a new program that actually competes with something the private sector is already doing. And so I think those are what we're looking at. But we're also looking at there are a number of agencies where you have within, for example, DHHR, a number of different agencies within DHHR that are basically doing the same thing or duplicating efforts. And so I think there are areas where, and we've had a good discussion already with our new DHHR secretary about that. Are there ways that we can make our government run much more efficiently, where we can do away with duplication, where we can consolidate some services where they're being duplicated, and we may privatize some services that it doesn't mean that the people of West Virginia won't get those services. It'll just mean they'll be done out in the private sector and not with tax dollars.
Does privatizing to you mean PEIA? Are we looking at something
I think everything should be on the table that is something that the private sector does. So when you talk about anything in relation to insurance, yes, there is private sector insurance. But I'm not saying we're going to privatize PEIA or any particular program. But I do think those are things we need to discuss and talk about and look at ways where government should have certain functions, and those should be the primary functions, and they should be the top priority. And then after those, if you have the funding to do other things, great, let's do those. But when you're in a situation like we have now where there's not that funding, then you have to set the top priorities, just like I said, our households do. Let me just give you an example. If you are in a household and you're a two-income household and one spouse loses their job, you don't go out and spend more money as a result of that. You look at ways to economize in your own budget. I think this budget that the governor has put forward really goes in the wrong direction, because even though we are have a constraints in our budget and a downturn in our energy sector because of what's going on in Washington for several years, he wants to spend more money instead of looking at ways to economize. And I think that's the wrong direction.
So the governor's plan, the proposal to cut about $30 million and increase the taxes in that $450 million, that actually results in the loss of 189 jobs, according to the State Revenue Office. He also released this alternative plan that essentially cut almost everything. Every college and university in the state except for Marshall and WVU. We cut all senior services, a very extreme list of things that would need to be cut to make up for that deficit. And that results in the loss of 3,000 jobs. I think either plan you look at, the governor is essentially saying no matter what you decide to cut, you're choosing to lay off state workers. Are you all prepared to make that tough decision?
Well, first of all, let me say, in terms of this alternative budget, you know, one thing that I've seen in my time in the legislature, when you don't want to cut something, you make it seem as painful as it can be. And we went through that last summer when we were talking about cuts, and we asked the agencies to work with us and give us how would you cut 10%, and they didn't come back with the least harmful plan. They came back with the most harmful plan of how you would cut 10%. Well, I can make up, when I'm talking about cuts, a harmful plan, or I can make up a plan that does the least harm possible. I think this alternative budget, you know, and I haven't gone through every single, you know, line item of what the alternative plan that they put out would be, but I can tell you, I think all of us feel like it's looking like a doomsday, worst case scenario, which I don't think is where we need to go. And I don't think that the legislature wants to go there. But we are going to have to make some serious cuts. And we're going to have to make them in a way that does the least harm. And I think that's a responsibility of the governor, of the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature to come together on those and find the ones that we can agree on. Now, we put together last summer when we were dealing with the budget, over $200 million in cuts that we proposed to the governor to Governor Tomlin. And there was not willingness to do a number of those cuts. So we're going to have to come together on these cuts, and I think we will do that over the next 60 days. And we'll have a budget that does have cuts. It may have some tax reform. It may use some out of the rainy day fund. It may use some other sweeps and some of the special revenue accounts. It's going to have to be a combination of those things, but I just don't see... I don't think there's any willingness to go $400 million in taxes by the legislature to just continue to grow government and spend more. I don't see that.
We've got just a few moments left, so let's end with an easy one.
Okay.
Choose for me one education-related bill that you'd like to see make its way through your chamber this year.
Well, certainly I want to see legislation that gives local control back to our teachers and our principals and our superintendents. I mean, we control so much from Charleston. It's unbelievable. And we have good teachers who want to get into that classroom and really teach those children and reach them in creative ways. But they can't do it under the current system. There's so much red tape, regulation, that the State Department of Education has put in place. You know, I was talking to a principal, and they said, you know, they just continually get all these memos from the state board. Here's how you're going to do this. Here's how you're going to teach this. Here's how you're going to operate in the classroom. And then the teachers have to change the process that they're doing and learn how to do this. They don't have the freedom to be able to teach children the way they see best. And I think they need to have that. We need to trust our teachers more. And I think that's a very important reform that we can make in education.
House Speaker Tim Armstead, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
There are more than a few new faces in both the State Senate and House of Delegates this legislative session. Tonight we meet three of those lawmakers, all from the state's Northern Panhandle.
Ryan Ferns is a Republican from Ohio County, representing West Virginia's 1st Senatorial District. He was elected to the State Senate in 2014 after spending 4 years in the House of Delegates, at the time serving as a Democrat. Ferns is the Senate's majority leader and outside of the State House works as a physical therapist. Pat McGeehan is a Republican delegate from Hancock County. He represents the state's 1st House of Delegates District. He first served a term in the House from 2008 to 2010 and was re-elected in 2014. He also spent 8 years in the U.S. Air Force. Mark Zetezolo also represents the 1st House of Delegates District. A Republican from Hancock County, he was first elected to a seat in 2014. Delegate Zetezolo previously chaired the City of Weirton Redevelopment Authority and works as a hydrologist.
When West Virginia lawmakers created the retirement system for state workers, they did not require themselves to pay for employee pensions each year in full, leaving mounting debt in the system. Today, West Virginia is on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars in pension obligations, and lawmakers are learning about how that impacts the overall fiscal health of the state. The House and Senate Finance Committees held a joint meeting in the House chamber today, hearing a presentation from an arm of the Pew Charitable Trusts that focuses on government policy. The presentation concentrated on the state's pension liabilities, or unpaid debt, in the teachers' retirement system. Lawmakers approved a bill in 2012 committing to paying off that debt. Today, Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall says West Virginia is making $500 million in payments each year toward what's owed. That payment is about equal to the deficit lawmakers are facing in the 2018 budget. In other words, if they didn't have to pay the pension debt, next year's budget would likely be balanced. But Hall says lawmakers cannot back out on their promise to pay off the pension liabilities.
Well, it's a horrible idea because, though it would be a short-term, quote, fix, it wouldn't be very long to where the numbers would be getting away from you.
Hall says not paying off the pension debt now means future generations are left with a bigger hole to dig themselves out of. While budgetary issues will remain among lawmakers' top priorities at the State House, legislative leaders do have other issues they'd like to tackle this session. In the House, that includes some changes to state ethics laws. Liz McCormick brings us a look at the first of those bills to make its way through the chamber.
The first bill making its way through the State House of Delegates this year is House Bill 2006, increasing the penalties for violating the whistleblower law. A whistleblower is someone who notifies the authorities when a person or organization they work for is involved in some kind of illegal activity. West Virginia's whistleblower law protects a public employee from retaliation after coming forward about abuse from his or her employer. House Judiciary Chairman John Schott of Mercer County is the lead sponsor of the bill. He says the penalties currently on the books for an employer who violates this law or retaliates against the employee doing the whistleblowing is a fine of up to $500. As well as a suspension from his or her job for up to 6 months. But Schott says House Bill 2006 changes that.
It gives them a greater penalty, and it also increases the monetary penalty from $500 to $5,000. But it takes it out of the hands of the judge, except to make a finding, and puts it back in the hands of the public agency to take the action against the offender.
The bill makes it clear that the offender would have to personally pay the fine. Instead of the 6-month suspension, the bill gives the public agency the option to completely terminate any employee who tries to discourage or punish a whistleblower.
A person who reports misconduct or waste should not be retaliated against, and this just strengthens the protection of those people so they'll feel comfortable coming forward if the penalties against someone who retaliates against them are strengthened.
Delegate Barbara Evans-Fleshauer of Monongalia County is the minority chair for House Judiciary. She says she thinks the bill is a great improvement, adding her name to the legislation as a co-sponsor.
If we have somebody that comes forward and says there's fraud, there's abuse going on, and then they're retaliated against, I think, you know, that they're doing something that helps the public. And so I think that making the person who is retaliating personally liable is the way it should be. The taxpayers shouldn't have to cover the cost of the fine. I think it's a really good bill.
Fleshauer says this bill is an example of how legislators can work in a bipartisan way to create better policy in the state. Chairman Schott says the bill will be one of several ethics bills to come before the House this session. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
House Bill 2006 was on first reading today and will be put to a final vote in the chamber Wednesday. Tomorrow on the legislature today, newly elected Senate President Mitch Carmichael will join us to share his views on the issues. For now, I'm Ashton Mara. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Thank you.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Paige Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.